Well, I think we should move on here, because otherwise time flies when we're having fun. Those that, I think we'll go around the table, those that have new people and new jobs and lots of things to do. I'm Alan Jessica. I'm a retired Army reservist, school teacher, kind of green all over. I'm in several green teams, and last weekend I was out at, with the city and county picking up cigarette butts, and because they had the butts are here routine, and they got 30 bags of litter, and I forgot how 16 pounds of cigarette butts or whatever. I told them they were cheating because it was wet. You know, they weigh it by the gram. You know, you think it were diamonds, but we were busy doing that. So I'd like to welcome everybody here, and this is our quarterly meeting. And just want to go around the table, Steve.
I'm Steve Brooks, and I've been on the committee for 5 years now. And my background is solid waste. I work for the city of San Jose, and I was the deputy director for integrated waste management for about 4 years there. So that's what brings me to do this role.
Okay. We know Kim.
Kim Brunless, environmental operations specialist for the solid waste program.
Travis, Clark County Solid Waste.
And
Clark County Solid Waste.
Derek, with Waste Connections, I'm the district manager for Clark County.
I teach at
Kansas
High School, and I'm
Tim Kraft, I am a civil engineer, retiring slowly but surely, trying to get out of the business, working locally here in Clark County. I've been here about 25 years, and I live in East Clark County, so I'm representing Southeast.
I'm Rich McConaughey with the City of Vancouver Solid Waste and Recycling Program, and I'm the city's member on SWAC. Okay.
And Jason?
Jason Presser, Fairway Independent Mortgage. I've lived kind of in Clark County most of my life, here representing the business community.
Okay. According to our agenda, then we've pretty much done the roll call. We've got Chris and Warren won't be here tonight, and I think Simone will come in later. Any word on Derek or Jason?
Derek's here.
Oh,
there's
Derek. Oh, yeah. Okay. There we go.
Immediate response.
Alive.
There we go. That rounds us out. So the next thing, of course, is to look at your minutes. Kim, whoever did this, did a really good job. It goes on and on and on. It must be almost word for word. I didn't remember doing this before. You know, five pages of it. Is there a motion? Take a look at it quickly. I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes unless somebody's found something to change. Any comments? Okay, is there a motion to accept the minutes then?
All motions approval of the
second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes. Good job on those. Okay, continuing on. Doing with the updates, Clark County Public Health.
Yeah, so I'm going to give just a quick overview of what our programs have been working on, and a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about are updates as well. But and then we have a live presentation for everybody tonight, because that sounds a lot more fun than myself talking. Potentially interactive? I don't know. Pressure, but...
No.
Okay, no, not interactive, but...
It includes puns.
It includes... I mean, that's as good as it gets. So, we've had a lot of stuff going on, so I'm going to just give a high-level overview of what's been going on. As far as green schools go, Kaylee's going to talk a little bit about that, one of the main projects that they've got going on, but one of the most recent events, they had their green schools training. And even despite some of the challenges they had getting people to sign up due to all the school strikes, they still had 23 schools participate. Gosh, that was like 3 weeks ago?
The
Green Schools Summit. You're right. Okay, the training, the Green Schools Summit. Sorry, I get those two confused. So, but it had 23 schools participate. Recently as well, the Master Composter Recycler Program had 25 residents at their backyard composting class. I think they're really trying to chase. Last year, they had a record number of Master Composter Recyclers participating in their program, and I think they're trying to beat that number. I can't remember specifically what those are. But last year was the biggest year yet, and we're trying to get a bigger year of volunteers out there helping out. On Saturday, though, this past weekend was a big weekend for our Green Neighbors program. We had the Green Neighbors birthday party that happened. I don't know if anybody here was able to attend, but that's something we do every year to bring in some outside topics and kind of introduce people through various topics to waste reduction, recycling, and this year's was just past weekend. So I haven't seen participation numbers yet, but that's coming up. And then the other part of that program is that we might be able to share it via link, but they've put out two videos or are working on two videos. One is on the website for recyclersonly.com, which is our contamination, just a couple of videos that we're making to put out to the public and put on our social media websites. And it's a parody of the farmersonly.com dating website. So we're working on some puns is really what we're working on all over the place. And parodies, trying to get some traction on just unique ways to talk to the public. So that's what's been going on there. We also had the medication take-back program. I just got the numbers. They're sitting in my email inbox, but I think it was one of the biggest medication take-back programs for all the locations that we've had so far. So that, again, is just people bringing medication. We don't want medication going down the toilets, and we don't want it loosely thrown into the garbage. So, and this is a good way to get it out of the wrong hands and out of the wrong holes in the ground and into the right place. The Green Neighbors birthday party had 50 people, close to 50 people. And they're working on the one jar challenge, which is challenging people to, I think, over a month. Over a week, okay. There's a one jar challenge where it's to see if you can only produce one jar of garbage for the week. And you can't hide it or stash it at other people's houses. You have to legitimately generate only a jar of garbage per week. So that would be more of a bucket. I'm trying to think. It's a one quart canning jar.
Oh, okay.
And they'll be posting their progress. So people that take the challenge will be sending in information, and they'll be posting that on Facebook. And that was a combined effort from all of our AmeriCorps, which I think started since last time. Did we have new AmeriCorps last time we chatted? We've got five new ones running around the office right now. So we should refer to them as a platoon from now on. So the platoon of AmeriCorps have started, and we've got five really solid AmeriCorps this year. I think we've got a good group of people. So again, those are people that we don't pay very much money and have to do a whole lot of work. But it's a... You know, it's job experience, so it's more of a glorified internship where they get a lot of experience. So we're happy to have them on board. And I think just ongoing, we have on our websites always available, and I don't have specific dates, but we've got our Master Composter Recycler Series, which was on the flyer that we passed out last time, and we can make that available electronically, as well as the morning blends for the businesses are ongoing at locations around the county, and I think they had one at New Seasons recently, and they were very specific about attending, because apparently the food is good at the New Seasons morning blends, but they're very, very particular about, because the food waste, not producing more food than people that are going to be there. So I know that you guys, it was definitely an RSVP-only type of event, but they had a good turnout. So are there updates that I'm forgetting that you guys can think of off the top of your head? No, we're kind of getting into sort of some active season, but not a lot of big events until the beginning of the new year. So. So one of the things that we're going through is I've been here for just a little bit over a year now, and we have our solid waste management plan. And one of the things that we needed to accomplish was solid waste management plan health check. So taking a look at all of the recommendations that were made in our solid waste management plan, of which there are quite a few, and doing a gap analysis to see which ones are we meeting, which ones have we met, which ones are yet to be met. And so part of that work, as well as identifying what some of our future plans are and what we need as far as the team goes for training, for workloads, and to really, and budgets, and kind of feed into our 2019 budget, feed into our 2019 work plans, our employee development plans, for everything we need to do as well as accomplish the solid waste management plan health check. We took this Tuesday, and we had an offsite retreat with food and games, and there was a lot of work as well, but I'd like to lead with those two things because it was a little bit more entertaining. So we had a retreat, went over some information that everybody will be providing, and over the next 3 weeks we're all going to be working on kind of really taking a look at all the work that we're doing, all the work that we need to be doing, and how we're going to get to all of those points. So at some point I'll be able to bring back a solid waste, hopefully by the next meeting I'll be able to bring back a solid waste management plan health check, where we're doing, where we need to go, and especially for the elements of the solid waste management plan that we feel like we're not accomplishing yet, really prioritizing and see if those are still going to be things that we need to prioritize, or if the climate and culture, and I say climate as in just the values and the needs have changed, if we need to reprioritize the things that are left, and take a look at whether or not the work that we're doing is meeting everything, or if we need to add some more projects or programs. So by the next meeting, I'll be able to bring a solid waste management plan health check to everybody. And I'm calling it a health check, gap analysis, whatever people like to call it. But really, are we doing what we said we would be doing? And if not, how do we get there? So, so we took Tuesday to do that. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. It was a heavy day of a lot of work and a lot of me talking and explaining this thing that I've made. We learned a lot about each other, and I think it was a good opportunity to.
Whether you wanted to.
Pardon?
Whether you wanted to.
Well, we played this game that was tell us about three jobs you had prior to starting here, and make them kind of unique, so that if we drew them, you had to try to guess who that person was. There were some jobs I did not know existed. I'm not going to name names, but anywhere from fishmonger/fishhead chopper offer to. Somebody would distract truck drivers while they repoed their trucks. Didn't know that was a job. So, you know, you guys can guess who on our staff had some of those positions. I learned flop and drop is a term for, a divey hotel, motel. Managing those too. There were a lot of very interesting jobs that people have had before they came here. And it was very difficult to guess what some of those
Hopefully
were.
Hopefully they've moved up.
Or laterally at least, but I don't think anybody's taken a step backwards, I would say. So it was a good opportunity just to bond and get to know each other a little bit better, and for me to get to know everybody, and then just start doing some really serious planning about our work and look at all of our guiding documents that we use to guide our work and determine how we move forward. So,
thank you.
And then as the end part of this retreat, I promised I wasn't going to talk a lot, the update is that I did want Kaylee to present, and I was going to have it be part of the program update so that Kaylee could depart when she was done, was part of what we've been working on at Green Schools is that milk dispensers project is rolling out, and there's been some very, very entertaining stories, but I wanted Kaylee to come and present, and I don't know if anybody's met Kaylee McLaughlin-Burton, but she is one of our newest team members came on about 10 months ago, and she is supporting our working with our Green Schools and our Master Composter program, but I wanted her to show some information and some of the videos and some of the work that's been going on around the milk dispensers. So I would like to turn it over to Kaylee to finish up the solid waste, the county updates.
When we were at that conference, the big deal was the review of the chapter, that 173.350. When you do that gap check, would you bounce it off against this and see if there's anything where
need to look and see what he's talking about is ecology's issuing or updating rules relating to, and Melissa can probably speak to this better than I can right now, but They're updating rules on ecology's requirements for what happens at transfer stations. Actually, Derek, a lot of people at this table could talk about it better than I could, actually. So.
I haven't read it, but...
Yeah. So it clearly
got until tomorrow morning.
So I think we would.
It's always.
I think we want to understand what that means. I don't know how much it will impact the recommendations that were in the solid waste management plan, but I think if we have things that we haven't accomplished yet, that we are concerned or think may be impacted or may change prioritization based on what's in that rule, then we would talk about that. But we haven't really dug into the rule just yet, so we would... Yeah, so yes, if appropriate.
There are not significant changes to our solid waste handling facilities, per se. They have changed a lot of the definitions as far as solid waste that is a commodity versus actual solid waste. So the transfer stations, they... get paid to accept that money, so it is not a commodity that they're handling. So the changes don't really impact a lot of our solid waste handling facilities, but will impact some of our exempt facilities, like scrap metal recyclers specifically, except for a lot of our scrap metal recyclers also accept other things, which then keep them in that exempt status. So things like batteries and appliances that have chemicals, so we do not have oversight on those. But as far as our actual solid waste handling facilities, there are some changes, but not drastic.
Thank you.
Okay. And there is a presentation, a webinar tomorrow, starting at 9 in the morning. I think Kim sent that link out to Slack.
Not to Slack, but if we can...
Okay, I forward it to you, and then you can send it out. It starts at 9 tomorrow morning, goes till 12:45, I believe.
So if you really need to...
If you really
got something to do on Friday morning.
Yeah. So they'll go over different sections with changes, but it primarily has to do with the commodities and also soils, the definition of clean soils.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Move forward.
All right. So this was the one and only pun that I was referring to. Green Schools, we support schools in all of their sustainability efforts, but particularly focused on waste and recycling. And our focus is usually in the cafeteria. I forgot. I have these pictures of a lot of lunches nowadays served with a staggering number of disposables. The amount of garbage being produced in cafeterias is crazy. They will have baby carrots in a plastic bag and then in a paper boat and then on a disposable tray. And it's staggering. And so when we do waste audits with students and they see how much waste they're producing and they want to do something about it, it's usually a student-driven project about bringing more reusables and washable plates, utensils, things like that to the cafeteria. We heard about milk dispensers. Milk dispensers are sort of a thing in the school waste reduction world. To reduce carton waste, these school cartons are kind of, they have a lot of challenges to recycling them, and actually in a lot of places they're not recyclable or they're not an accepted material. In Clark County they are, but custodians were telling us that they had a lot of issues with the residual milk making the cartons mold before they could even get picked up, or if they dumped them in the dumpsters loose, that residual milk was contaminating all the other paper. So the custodians were expressing frustration. The students they told us they didn't like it. And then we heard that in Clackamas County, they were installing milk dispensers at some schools in Canby, and the results were just overwhelmingly positive. Michelle and Ellen and I, our Green Schools team, went to a school to see how it was working and to kind of see if this would be something good for Clark County schools. And the secretary was like, oh, you're here to see the milk dispenser. We love it. And then before we left, when we went to the restroom, a teacher in the restroom stopped us and was like, you're here looking at the dispenser. Oh, my gosh, we love it. So it was, everyone seemed to really like it. And they said students were drinking more milk. They were actually having to buy less milk. So how was that possible? Students were taking what they were actually going to drink and they were pouring out less. And they didn't have the carton waste, and then they also had reduced milk waste. So we said, let's give it a go. And so with funding from Department of Ecology's local solid waste financial assistance, We launched, after many false starts because of the strike, at York Elementary. And so this is how it went.
Where is that?
York. York Elementary is an Evergreen public school. kind of like off of like Patton and Ward Road, kind of like around there.
Corner.
Let me see if I can get this to play. It's so hard doing this on another screen. Ah, there we go.
Thank you.
audits of the school's waste and student surveys before we launch the dispenser, and then at the end of the school year, we're going to audit again and compare. So we're providing that assistance, but we also learned that we can't handle too much. Otherwise, on the first day that the Green Schools team isn't there, we're like, okay, try on your own. It didn't go as well, and they were super reliant on us. So that was one of the lessons we learned early on.
Got a few questions.
Yeah.
So you said each glass fills is 8 ounces. Mm-hmm. What was the capacity for the cartons? Yeah, the cartons.
The cartons, 8 ounces. Oh. So 8 ounces is the federal survey. So when they say, so there are 5 meal components, and kids have to have a meal that has 3 components, and one of those has to be a half a cup of fruit or vegetables. And in order for it to count as a component, there's that amount to it. So for the milk, it's 8 ounces. But most of these food service providers are already meeting those 3 components in the entree they're serving. And so the milk, while it used to often be a required part of the meal, it's not anymore. And we're actually finding that that's why a lot of students are pouring out their milk, is because they thought they had to take it. We went to one school where they didn't know they could recirculate milk that wasn't opened. And we watched the custodian just open like, so there was a lot of confusion about milk in school cafeterias, and this project has been really enlightening for us, but also for the district staff or nutrition services and for the different food service providers on just exactly what is happening in their cafeterias.
Awesome. So this is being funded by a grant. What happens if those funds disappear? Do we stop this initiative or...
Well, so right now what we wrote the grant for was for 4 dispensers. So enough to launch 4 dispensers, and those are all the startup costs. We're not paying for the milk, things like that. So if a school decides it doesn't want it, we can move it to another school. If the funding goes away, it's not like we're going to need to go in and like take the dispensers away.
Right. But it just prevents future implementation
exactly.
For other schools.
The intent of this is to be a pilot. There are a lot of schools. And how much would you say that this costs per school? I know at one point it was $10,000 was like an estimate, but I think you guys found a much more effective way to do that.
It's about 5. Even though like 700 kids might be in a school, only about 200 milk purchases are made in a day. So I think that's where some of those higher numbers came from was, oh my gosh, 700 cups and things like that, and really it's a lot less.
So while we would be able to more easily, because it's less intense, well, I wouldn't say it's less intensive, but set up a composting program or help schools recycle, this is to pilot an upstream, which I think is one of the, it was a pun, but I think that's one of the most important parts of this is that upstream element where, yes, sometimes those can be recycled, sometimes they're a challenge, but the ultimate is to get rid of that stream altogether and look at it from a bigger life cycle analysis and a bigger environmental and cost benefit to the school. So the goal for this is to pilot it. And then if the grant goes away or if this, you know, once we get through this grant, we may revisit to say maybe there's a financial assistance grant we could put together to distribute to schools if they want to take this on themselves. But this is a way to try it out, get the lessons learned, best management practices. And then these videos are a really good way to kind of introduce this concept to new schools. And once you have a few success stories, it's a little easier to get that rolling in some of our less receptive schools or less
aggressive.
Yeah,
let me put it this way. We would walk into schools trying to determine who our first 4 schools would be, and kitchen staff would run up to us and say, "Don't you dare put a milk dispenser here!" But then we showed the York video at our student summit where 23 schools were represented, and all of a sudden the next day, 8 requests for milk dispenser. Our AmeriCorps went out to a school that week, and they came up to her and were like, "Oh yeah, you know, we're not going to need to worry about this when we get our milk dispenser." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And they just were like, "Oh yeah, we're getting one." I will say the administration in one of the school districts we're working with loves this so much and wants to make reducing waste such a focus that they're considering incorporating these in the design of their new schools and taking this on themselves. So that's kind of the hope is that we're kind of introducing them. Change is hard in big institutions like that, so if we can be there to kind of make that change easier and they go, "Hey, this isn't so hard and there's a lot of benefit to this," then they'll take it on themselves.
The dispensers were rented? You didn't buy them?
No, we bought them.
So you bought them. So they're owned by the county?
Through a college? Well, I don't know. It's weird. If you ask Ecology, they own them.
Yeah.
If you ask us, we own them. If they want to take back milk carton dispensers and or milk dispensers in 20 years, they're more than welcome to take some scrap metal. But we own them, and that's part of there's an agreement that the schools have to sign to do a certain amount of planning with us to provide us with a certain amount of data. Because a big part of this is we need to have data to back it up or to determine success. You know, as much as kids smiling into the camera saying, we love it, that Ecology doesn't really take that as like a metric that they believe in. So we have to get some really good solid data to say this is productive or this is an effective way to reduce waste. So there's an agreement that we have with the schools, and if they stop using it, then they return them to us and we will. So they're owned by us. Ecology could come and take 25% of them if they wanted to, but I don't know that they would. So,
if York Elementary is happy with them, they can keep them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if the grant runs out, the program still goes.
Exactly.
It's not like
for those schools, just not future implementation.
Can't keep buying.
Unless it's a new bill and they decide to.
Right, and the district says this is something we want to buy. We think this is really cool. We're going to buy it.
Yeah. Especially if we can demonstrate cost savings, efficiencies elsewhere, then that's a really good way for us to get them to take it on themselves. Yeah. But there's always a little bit of, you got to do a lot of convincing for some of these schools.
Well, with that, what's the reduction in cost per serving?
So we're not sure yet because Lauren, we just launched on Friday.
Okay.
York, we launched mid-September because of the strikes. And there were some issues with the local dairy distributor in terms of working out how that delivery and that kind of special order was going to be made. But now that we have two schools that they're providing milk in the bags for, you know, that may change things. So the school district, the nutrition services director, haven't given us exact numbers yet, but that is data that we plan on collecting.
Okay. And then is that going to offset the increased labor costs to wash the glasses, like the increased labor for the kitchen service?
So when we've identified schools that would be a good fit for this pilot project, we've looked at would this add to be an extra thing their staff has to do, or does their staff already have downtime between lunch periods that they can be, you know, just wheeling cups in and washing? We're also buying them enough cups where they don't have to wash them at all during the day if they don't want to. But like we were at Lauren, and in between lunch period, you know, the students in one lunch period, they all flood in. I was timing it. It took about 10 minutes for all of the students in that grade to go through the lunch line. And then the rest of the lunch period, the other 20 minutes of the lunch period, the staff is rolling the cups back into the dishwasher and they're, you know, doing other things. But also custodial, they don't have to empty the recycle bins anymore. And so they're, you know, one of the custodians was really thrilled about this project. She said that she loves it because she said her job at the waste sorting station is much easier. So we're being very careful in identifying schools where this doesn't increase labor costs.
Okay. Cool.
Are they energy efficient machines?
I believe they are.
I'd have to look at
the, I know.
I'd have to look at the RFP or the.
I know Michelle asked about that, and we checked because, yeah, we didn't want to put something in a school, and then, oh my gosh, their energy costs are way up. Because when we work with schools on sustainability projects, while we focus on waste and recycling, we also help schools in the other five areas they can get state certified, or five areas they can get state certified in, and one of them is energy. And so we know what they're trying to accomplish and that they're looking at energy usage, and so we don't want to be the ones helping them with waste and recycling, but moving them further from energy certification.
And then I guess, I don't know if it speaks to the reduction in the amount of storage space you have to have chilled on hand from moving to cartons to bags. The storage is more efficient, less potential of their other refrigerators. So I think there's a whole lot of data that's going to feed into energy cost, waste reduction, and all of these things, and we'll get a much better holistic understanding. Because there's all those secondary benefits of doing this type of thing where you're not storing, you know, 500 or 200 cartons. You're storing a couple of, you know, boxed wine-sized milk containers. So
yeah, I really like this. But then you really you have the energy costs of the washing process.
Yeah, exactly. And you're wearing your energy dressed to Oregon shirt, so I see you definitely in that mindset.
I look through. Right?
Yeah. No, and I think that's good. Is that we really, and I think that's really something that I think in a lot of our programs we are trying to figure out the best way to talk about is that the recyclability of something or the waste reduction isn't the only element that's important when we're making these considerations. So yes, if we're going to put something in, there are trade-offs that are going to have to be made, but how impactful are they, or are they giving up something that they were already doing well at? You know, like Kaylee said, we don't want to undo the good work that's been done, but, you know, try and find the right level of benefit for all of the different green school areas. So.
And what are the next schools?
We don't know yet. So we have a bunch of schools, since these videos launched, a bunch of schools chomping at the bit for this. But like I said, we're very careful in identifying schools that are going to be a good fix. We want this to be successful. We don't want to put this in a school and have it be a complete catastrophe, have them be like, we don't want to do any waste and recycling projects ever again. So we have, from our experiences, from all the site visits we've done, from launching at York and Lauren, we have a list of criteria of, you know, surprisingly, a lot of schools don't have dishwashers. So obviously, even if a school green team leader contacts us and is like, my students are really jazzed up about this, we can't do it if you don't have a dishwasher. So dishwasher, the amount of staff. Also, is their kitchen staff, what are their attitudes like? Are they willing to try something new? Or is it going to be stressful for them? We do look at energy use. If that school is an old school that's going to get torn down next year anyways, or if it's a newer school, there are so many different variables we look at before we decide to move forward with the school.
Okay, and are you, hopefully you'll move out into some rural schools?
Well, Lauren is in Battleground.
Okay.
What are you saying about Battleground?
What are you, yeah, so actually we offered it to all of the district.
La Center?
We offered it to everyone. La Center has one of our platinum, the only platinum certified high school for green schools in the state. And so we offered it to all the school districts and heard back from, I think, 3 or 4 that said, yeah, we'll try this. There were a few that contacted us and said, we'll see how it works out for the other guys. So it was really Evergreen, Camas, and Battleground that really said we want to be the first ones to try this.
Thank you.
Well, Lauren's kind of out of the sticks, too. You know, it's not a city school.
It's a bit of a drive.
Yeah. And, you know, Glenn, what is it, the little elementary school next door, you know?
Yeah, that's where the fourth graders are coming from. Right.
Was there any student involvement in the project other than, you know, just getting their milk? Are there student workers in the cafeteria?
So one of the things that we learned and that we kind of thought, we told the school district that this is going to be more successful if we can come in and work with your green team, your student green team, and they can become ambassadors teaching their peers on why the milk dispenser and how, because instead of just taking a carton, there's so many other steps. And but the districts were insistent that we start on the first day of school. And so in that case, we couldn't do education. With Lauren, we were trying to schedule Waste Gone into some of their science classes and getting them involved in the process early on. But because of schedules, we're not able to get into those classrooms and work with those kids until December. So we had to do it backwards. Moving forward, when we're identifying the next two schools, we are saying that it's going to weigh more heavily for us in making the decision if they have a green team that we can go in and do education with beforehand and have the students become ambassadors for the project.
Thank you.
Well,
enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. That was good.
I have those every night when I go to bed after I do one of those videos. I have those tracks, those music tracks, like in my brain.
Are those available somewhere?
Yeah. So actually, that reminds me.
Are you using?
Using
that. Oh, never mind. I'll show them out.
On the Green Schools website, so clarkgreenschools.org, under resources, there's a videos page. The Lauren one isn't up yet because we're waiting for final approval from Battleground Help with Schools. Also, we have a new Facebook page. So if you like us or follow us on Facebook, you'll see these videos.
On our website, you can also sign up for our monthly newsletter, and we include these videos in the monthly newsletter.
Okay. And we can probably include links to that in notes or in an update for everybody as well, and the other videos that we've talked about so far.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. That is all of our updates for right now.
Now we need to, what is it, Melissa in enforcement now?
Yep.
Is Melissa in enforcement?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Chuck, you just flew in, right?
Yep.
All the way from Kenya.
Yeah, just jet setting up and down I-5 nowadays.
Hi, my name is Melissa Sutton. Welcome to our new members.
Were we all ready for presentations tonight?
I know.
Yeah, everybody had 20 minutes.
I wanted to be easy.
Look at that.
So that's
what we're
calling.
Very nice.
I actually have pictures that you would want to see blown up, but they are leaders. So again, I'm Melissa Sutton. I work with solid waste enforcement for Clark County Public Health. I'm an environmental health specialist. I have been doing this, actually, in 2 weeks I will celebrate my 15th year with Clark County Public Health, which is a little overwhelming. And I've been in the solid waste side of things, specifically, mostly for facilities, since 2007, so this is my 11th year. And which seems overwhelming and daunting, but I've been around for a while in solid waste enforcement. So I thought I would make it a fun presentation, it's a little more exciting. I sent out the quarterly reports, you should have received all of that with the fun pictures from my inspections. I didn't include all of those here, but you can view those at your home. quick update, citizen complaints. Chuck and I met couple weeks ago, and we went over everything that I've been doing this month and quarter, and it's like, oh my gosh, and I took a bunch of vacation, and I was like, no wonder I feel like I am so scattered, because we got 75 complaints this quarter, and usually we get, 25 to 45 is like a heavy month, or heavy quarter, so 75 is a lot. Also, Clark County Code Enforcement had some staffing reductions unexpectedly this summer, and so I also was helping them out doing some of their code compliance that also relates to solid waste, more of junk and debris, abandoned vehicles, tires, furniture, not really the public health side of garbage that I typically deal with, but helping them. It still ties in with the grant funding that we do, but being able to support them was helpful that they were able to move their process complaints throughout the summer, although they were short-staffed. I did 14 facility inspections. 12 of those are our permitted facilities. 2 of them are exempt facilities. I typically try to do exempt facility inspections during fourth quarter. A, it's the end of the year, so then in my report I can say, oh yeah, and your annual report is due in just a few months. You should start on that. It's also a great time to look at things like stormwater management, making sure that they don't have leachate runoff, things stored outside that would have environmental impact. So I typically try to put those toward the end of the year, which adds more stress at the holidays, which is what everyone needs. This quarter, we received 4 solid waste permit applications, which is an obscene amount of applications for this program. One of them is the permitted facility, which is compost at Section 30. And then we've got 3 exempt. Going a little bit into that, Section 30 I brought up to talk before, but for new members, on August 8th, we received an initial solid waste scaling application. They are accepting yard debris at this location. We received a complaint about their yard debris handling or acceptance because they weren't an approved facility. And when they submitted their notice of intent to Ecology, they had over 20,000 cubic yards of yard debris coming in at one time, which is an exorbitant amount of material. So I was like, are you sure that it's that much? The exemption only allows up to 500 cubic yards of material at one time, so they were 4 times more than the exemption allows. And I was like, is there any way we can get you below the threshold?
oh no, we really want to keep doing this. So they turned in an application. I reviewed it with Department of Ecology. We got back to them on August 30th that it was incomplete. There were a lot of design specifications that weren't called out, engineering drawings that were incomplete, a lot of those just basic gaps. So they updated that on September 21st. And on the 20th, I've been in communication with their contractor. They had sections in there, and I've talked to Chuck about this too. They had sections like the closure plan. So when I go through the application, like closure plan, check, they've got that section. But then as I actually read their closure plan was exactly what the WAC says that they need to have. So it says, this facility will complete a closure plan in accordance with it. It's like, well, yeah, insert said closure plan here. So we're waiting on those details from their consultant before I can deem the application complete. Once the application is deemed complete, we will reboot that onto our website. I will send it out to all of the SWAC members so that you will have ample time to review that. It will go out for a multi-agency review. So agencies like Southwest Clean Air Agency, our local community development, and Washington State Department of Ecology have an opportunity to provide input. Ecology has 45 days to make a formal determination on the application once local health determines the application complete. So in that process, once we've gotten comments back during the 15-day multi-agency review, when we get those comments back, if there's substantial outstanding issues like zoning, if the land use issues have not been addressed, zoning, stormwater is a big one on this one in particular, then we may delay the public comment period because I want to make sure that they have adequately addressed the needs of City of Vancouver, for instance, before we submit it out to public review. We're hoping for a 30-day public review period, at which time, as SWAC members, you have that time as well. We'll end the public comment period, I'll present it to SWAC, and we'll ask for a formal recommendation from SWAC at that time if the member to either proceed with issuance of the permit or to deny the permit. So that's kind of your role. So I am hopeful that we will get these revisions complete and submitted to our department by the middle of this month. That would put our multi-agency comment period hopefully the first week of December. Then the public comment period would end in January sometime. So we may need a special meeting in January for this very topic. At some point, if there was conversation, then it may be better to have a specific meeting only for that, so because it may take more time. But public health, once we deem the application complete, we have 90 days by statute to move forward with the approval or to deny. We can do a conditional approval, but we have to make a formal determination within 90 days of it being. So that's kind of the little time frame that we're working with the February date. So just FYI. Any questions about that?
Meanwhile, the leaves are falling.
Yes. We have not issued a stop work order on this instance. They are managing the site appropriately. They are taking temperatures. They do not currently have a leachate collection pond, which is concerning to both myself and Department of Ecology. I have been out with Derek Rocket. It is a land reclamation site, so it's managed by DNR, Department of Natural Resources. I've been in communication with them, and also they have a sand and gravel permit through Department of Ecology, and I went out last week with them. City of Vancouver, I've notified their clean water folks, so I've been going out. Nikki's very familiar with the site, is working with them to try and get things lined up. So we are partnering with the right agency, even though it's in process and it isn't deemed complete, the appropriate agencies have been notified to try to keep them on track so that we don't have to issue a stop work order, that they can continue doing the operation until such time as we, if we deny the permit, we'll issue the stop work order at that time.
You probably get more leach up with this rain.
Yes. mm-hmm. Yes.
Thanks, Melissa.
We also have, so I mentioned we have three exempt facility applications. This is Tebow Pit. It is owned and operated by Tappany, who also has the Section 30 materials. This is also a land of reclamation site that is overseen by Department of Natural Resources. I've gotten to be very familiar with them this quarter. I had never met any of them before August. So Tappany said, hey, we got an earth through Department of Ecology, their environmental response tracking system, had gotten a complaint that there was this landmine reclamation that has all of this land clearing debris. So I coordinated with Department of Ecology. We went out with DNR staff, and this land clearing debris was, again, that 20,000 cubic, approximately 20,000 cubic yards. It's like their magic number. So it also exceeded the solid waste exemption for on-site composting, which is what they had hoped to do, and without a solid waste handling permit. It's kind of a one-time use for them. To have an ongoing solid waste application doesn't really make sense for this. When I was out there, we were there August 21st, and there was some steam coming off, so I recommended that they monitor the pile, and you know, having that volume, there is a strong potential for fire. Take it forward 2 weeks, and the pit caught on fire. On the 1st of September, the fire started, and it burned for 10 days. On the 19th of September, Tappany submitted a notice of intent for solid waste exemption to compost the remaining approximately 500 cubic yards of material. So it's up to Ecology to determine if they will allow that or not allow them to compost on site. My understanding is that the remaining materials have been ground at the direction of the fire marshal to ensure that the fire was out completely and all of the smoldering had ceased. And I believe they're going to utilize that material on other Tappany projects.
Is there an allowable turnaround time on those kind of projects?
So statute requires that Department of Ecology be the lead enforcement agency for solid waste exemptions. So any like definitive deadlines and timelines would go to Department of Ecology, but it would most likely fall under the piles section of
like a year or so.
For possible waste is the 3 months without a permit. So, yeah. So I'm hoping that they have learned a valuable lesson at this Tappany site of what can happen with yard debris when managed inappropriately, and to take better resources in the future.
So if any of you are thinking about filling in holes in your ground, in your yard, with
19,500 cubic yards burned and 500 cubic yards remain.
That's what I hear.
And they ran that through the grain.
They have, yes.
They're making wood chips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our second location is Paper People. They submitted a notice of intent on July 27th. We reviewed their application, returned it as, again, incomplete on the 2nd. It was missing things like some facility information, and we needed some additional clarification on some of their answers to questions required by the state. They updated it the next day. We sent it out for multi-agency review. There is an extensive detailed requirement from the City of Vancouver of various outstanding issues that will need to be addressed. I went out on the 25th with Department of Ecology, Derek Brockett, Nikki from City of Vancouver, Clean Water. They have, I think we found zero of the stormwater collection systems to be functional at the facility. They had multiple mixed drum, unlabeled drums outside storage. There were some big housekeeping issues that they're going to be addressing. Things like fire lane, maintaining the fire lane, fire locks. They have a lot of things, site plans that they need to address through the city before Ecology can and approve them as an official exempt facility for their processing.
So what's the enforcement role in Clark County on something like this versus the city of Vancouver?
A lot of it, the difference between the county and the city tends to come in the realm of land use. So land use and planning and how they handle it from department to department. Typically the city in my, I don't know, maybe this isn't the best, maybe I shouldn't answer this with my, I mean, they're put on a different hat, I think. I think it's mostly from a land use perspective is of how they interpret the codes and the regulations for a solid waste handling facility for land use.
And two parts of public health, there's the enforcement side, which is more the regulatory piece, and then Travis is more of a planning piece and implementation type stuff. So with the city, we also rely on Clark County Public Health to do that whole regulatory piece for solid waste related stuff. And we have our land use people and our stormwater people and code enforcement, they're all doing some of that.
Yeah, a lot of times what this probably does is just outside of city limits. So this is inside city limits.
Right. Yes, in the city, within the city limits, the city is the lead regulatory agency for the land use planning, and outside, even in the urban growth area, the county community development would be the lead as far as planning and land use. Did I answer that question? Yeah. The solid waste regulations, for those of you who are new, are really amazing in that part of the performance standard says, and you must be in compliance with all federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Very blanket. So it's everything from the stormwater, the land use, everything, fire, anything that can be out there. So paper people, on the 30th, City of Vancouver sent their correction letter with their findings from our inspection on the 25th, and we're hoping to get some. I think it will be a while for them to, but they are slowly making progress to do the right thing. So they are working with us. Earth-friendly recycling is where from our education outreach side, they're like, oh, Melissa, what do you think about this earth-friendly recycling? Aren't they amazing? I was like, oh, never heard of them before, so maybe we should try to get them on board. So thank you to Kim. She was like, we're doing a tour. They want to take all of our blocks home. I'm like, well, let's get them on the right page first. So we received a notice of intent on September 8th. Again, it was incomplete. I don't know why we keep getting incomplete forms, but we do. We got an updated form on the 21st. I was on vacation for a long time, so I had explained that to him before, but unfortunately we got it while he's gone. So on the 4th, it was deemed complete. We did multi-agency review. Clark County Community Development provided formal comment requesting additional information regarding the site. And so we are waiting for them to complete that role before we can make a determination. But then on the 27th, the applicant sent an email to Community Development that their current location isn't going to work for their new compactor that they've upgraded to. So they're actually going to be moving on March 1st. So we'll get another application for another facility, although it's the same but different. So probably next quarter we should have an application for their new facility.
So they compact and then ship someplace?
Yeah, so they receive so Paper People receives a bunch of paper products and paper goods. And they either, you know, so Clark County, for instance, we generate a lot of paper and cardboard. All of that gets boxed up and taken to Paper People. They bail it up and then sell it as a commodity. Some of their paper that they get, they, like the Georgia Pacific Mill, let's say that their rolls that they make Xerox paper with, make them in batches of 5,000 sheets of paper, then whatever's left on that roll goes to Paper People and they can make 50 sheets of paper, you know, with that waste. So they reuse that. That's kind of on their processing side. The earth-friendly recycling, they have a block foam densifier. They They accept batteries. They're accepting various appliances and taking out chemicals in them. They're accepting scrap metal. They're accepting computer electronic stuff. They have a wide assortment of and varied commodities that they're accepting at their location. For those of you that have been around SWAC for a long time, we have a Stone Bennett farm update. Formerly, that's known as the dead cow site, which is always great. So for those of you that are new, I have pictures, which is lots of fun. Yeah, not too many, but a couple. Kind of a little backstory. January 2016, Public Health received a complaint from Clark County Animal Control of a farm that had numerous deceased cattle. And the farmer was composting the cattle in manure in January. So it is about a 40 to 45 acre site. So it's a lot of land for a farm. When we pulled up the mapping on GIS, about 20 acres are designated wetland, and about another 15 acres are hydric soils. So it's a very wet site, which is not really conducive to 100 cattle and their manure all within sight. So we did a site inspection on the 13th. It was by far the most egregious violation I can recall to date. For various environmental issues. We issued a notice and order on January 29th, and the cattle farmer appealed in February. We had a meeting with cattle owner and their legal counsel and public health. Go ahead.
I think that's 17, right?
Oh, just a, oh yeah, 17.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
I was, the time when...
Actually, those are all 2016s. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Those are 2016s. This oh, right, right. is chronological. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, 2016. We actually assessed a fine of $7,500, and we had the property owner pay $500 for the violation and then work toward compliance so that he had some monetary penalty for the egregious violation, but he also was making efforts, so we did want to recognize that. We worked with the property, with the cattle owner, to develop a corrective action plan. With that, they worked with Clark Conservation District to develop a best farm management plan. We developed an access agreement, which required them to allow access to public health four times within a calendar year, where we had to give 24-hour notice to access the property for site verification. And also requiring Clark Conservation District collaboration. In November, we did our first follow-up inspection, which was I just returned from maternity leave, so that's why there's kind of a little gap in there. And there were no dead animals observed, which is a big plus in my book. But during the inspection, there were no property improvements that had been made, and the manure that was there was pretty astronomical. On January 5th of 2017, we issued a second notice and order. We did a whole bunch of re-inspections. We finally ended up working with the family of the farm, and the cattle owner ended up passing away, so we got to work with the family instead, and they've restored it to a family farm. And we worked really closely, and also the family worked really closely with Doug Fenwick with Clark Conservation District. They developed an amazing plan. They implemented the plan. It's quite remarkable. So for those of you who are a little bit squeamish, you don't have to look at these pictures. But this is my first time out here, so keep in mind that I was also 4 months pregnant, which is awesome. Here they have a manure pile, and within this manure, you can't really see these pictures, but there were bones just poking out everywhere, all over. They have a surface water stream that runs through their property. As I mentioned, it is wetland and hydric soil, so it was January, so there was a stream running through, and you can see all of the bones. They were just like throwing animal carcasses out there and hoping for the best that wildlife would get them. It looked literally like the Wild Wild West, like you imagine, like just school phones everywhere. It was pretty crazy. This is the manure that you had to walk through just to get to the areas. But at one point, the manure almost capsized in my boot, and I was like, terrified that it was going to be stuck in this manure pile. Thank you to Sean for going. These are some of the cows and the conditions that they were in. But you can see that they have manure just all the way up past their hocks, and it was really poor conditions. Veterinarian was out there and deemed a lot of them malnourished, parasitic. There were cows like just roaming around everywhere, and this cow was just hanging out, completely caved in, and all the other cows were like mourning around him. It was a pretty intense inspection. So they have this manure lagoon pond here, and they have a spillway here. They had cattle that were actually accessing the lagoon, and then these huge piles of manure here. There was actually a break in the lagoon, so it was this spillway was directly to that creek that we saw earlier, the ephemeral stream, and so it was a mess. So then it went out a year later, and they had made a lot of progress. They had cleaned out a lot of the muck. I mean, I could walk through, but there was still a lot of manure near the lagoon. They had still had this low depression area in the spillway where it would overflow to the creek. They still had dead animals. This is actually the lagoon edge right here. So they have a dead animal, you know, 5 to 10 feet from the edge of this lagoon that then goes over to surface water. This is their manure pile that was still, that they just kind of piled everything up. It was wet, it was soupy, not composting, not really viable. So this is the after. This is what it looks like today. They have dug out a new low spot. So this is where, pretty much where that dead cow was in that earlier picture. They've dug that out, and it kind of fans out now. So the overflow of this pond, they've got rid of all the cows. There's no livestock there anymore. That was a huge win for us. The water now, the overflow, they work with our conservation district. This is now going to be just a wildlife pond. So birds are already hanging out there. They've tested the water. It does have E. coli in it, but it's mostly from the waterfowl. They've done nutrient load testing on the sediment. They were able to do some land application of that material. So from a public health perspective, this has been abated. So that is amazing. They've also spread the compost completely around the field in 2017. They did some reseeding. They were able to harvest a crop of hay this year, and their plan is to continue to harvest hay at this location, as they are now beekeepers. So bees are way cleaner than cows. So that was a big win for public health, and that was a long process, but just kind of a summary. So again, there's no livestock using the pastures, no livestock in the facilities. All the exposed manure and compost has been spread as planned by our conservation district at an agronomic rate. The waste storage pond is now functioning as a wildlife pond. The old pond spillway has been restored to drain to existing hayland. Erosion control seeding was complete. The property was hayed this year. In 2019, they're planning to renovate the compost spreading area and replant a forage mixture. They're going to continue with some noxious weed monitoring, but we are closing out our file from public health. We're very excited about that, and we'll be sending out a letter. Because the cattle farmers, the gentleman who created this whole mess for the family, and the family has worked really diligently to make humongous strides to do this. Chuck and I have talked, and we're going to waive the $7,000 fine that is on the property at this point so that the family doesn't bear that burden financially. But we'll be issuing that closure letter within the week.
Can you tell us how many acres was that?
It's about 40 acres for the farm itself, yeah.
Well, we better just move along.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was
thank you, though. Thank you.
Hopefully that's helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you all. Welcome, new members.
Okay. City of Vancouver.
So I've got a brief report. Tanya's out on vacation this week. So a reminder about fall leaf coupons. They're good from the 1st of October through the end of December. Curbside newsletter is here. Derek may talk about that more. There's a coupon in there where you can go online and print them off. The city and the county partnered together on that. The city is the lead in Clark County Roads Program pays for the county, county split on the leaves. We have an MOU by both agencies signed last month. And the coupons are also available online in Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese. And we'll do a summary of the fall leaf program at the February meeting. The city also runs, I can't remember if we've talked about this before, the city also runs a leafy neighborhood program. So on weekends, we send out leaf boxes and put them in the areas near where there's a lot of leaves. Deciduous trees. And then we let the neighbors know with their postcard and through the next door and the neighborhood association. The leaf box is going to be here this weekend. We drop it Friday afternoon. The public works crews do. Pick it up Monday morning, maybe service it a couple times during the weekend. And that's for people that maybe don't have a pickup to haul them to a disposal site or something. And the other thing, I've got some papers to hand out. We have a new program now. How many of you have been to Recycling 101 before? Mm-hmm. About 201.
Yeah, we did 201.
So because of the interest from the SWAC members, we developed a new program and tied it together under the branding of Recycle U. So we have a variety of programs we're going to do. We run this with Waste Connection staff and also partner with Clark County. Neighborhoods, and so a lot of opportunities if you want to take the 101, the 201, or the walk and talk. And so other classes will come up. We have a kid-friendly Recycling 101 at the Water Center December 3rd. So lots of opportunities to come up if you want to see the transfer station or go to a lovely meeting room someplace and learn about the program. I think the next one coming up is tomorrow at City Hall in the Aspen Room. But there's contact information there, and if you want more information on that program. And the other thing I was going to mention was the Vancouver Neighborhood Association is organizing a recycling panel discussion to talk about the National Sword, Blue Skies, and all that stuff. Thursday, November 15th, I think at the downtown Vancouver Community Library. So if you're interested in having some more discussion there, I think somebody from Waste Connection, somebody from the county probably is going to be there, know some neighborhood folks. So. And that's it.
Thanks, Rich. Questions? Okay, moving along. Derek?
Quick duty on, let's see, Waste Connection. So we're gearing up for the holiday season, for the winter. That always means snow and all the fun things that come along with service interruptions. So we're gearing up for that with a new website that's going live. It was supposed to go live by the 31st, but I think it'll be maybe tomorrow or sometime in the next few days. Not a huge change, just a little easier to navigate and easier for us to produce messaging to residents or businesses, particularly over the winter time. So we put a big press to get done before the holidays. On the market side, so the recycling markets have maintained pretty good stability. Prices are starting to creep up a little bit. The industry seems to be shifting a lot of demand to cardboard these days to supply Amazon, and some of that liner board or lesser quality cardboard, a lot of that's made out of a lot of locally recycled materials. So we're trying to kind of continue to shift and move that. Most everything else has been pretty stable. Plastics, all the rest, pricing has been pretty stable. But certainly paper continues to be a challenge for us and finding homes for it. Most all of it goes domestic now. We ship a little bit internationally. Most of it's staying domestic at the time. And last thing I would say is, I guess a couple more things. Rich mentioned our newsletter that went out to all the homes in Clark County. And it's been received well. I don't hear a ton about it. We kind of hope that most people enjoy it and use it. I had one conversation with a resident who was frustrated by they always are challenged by the recycle guide. So he did not like the recycle guide, and he felt like we were asking him to do our work for us, and that was unfair. So he did not like that he couldn't put certain types of materials in the blue cart. So that's his opinion, I guess, on what's recyclable and what's not. So we agreed to disagree. And then other markets-wise, we've got hog fuel. So we do not do the temporary hog fuel piles, but we do grind a lot of the material dropped off throughout Carr County. That historically had gone to Georgia Pacific Mill and Camas, and when that shut down last year, we expanded our markets. So most of it had gone up to Longview, to a Capstone mill in Longview, who just got bought up by, they just changed ownership. And, pardon me?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I was
hanging
out
with him. And then we are now shipping material starting this month out to Wallula, which is a mill, I can't remember the name of the company, but it's a mill out in the Tri-Cities area. So we're really starting to expand geography of the hog fuel markets just to keep the material moving. Still a lot of mills out there that are burning material, which is good in that market, but always interesting to see where they're going. And last thing I would say is we have our annual Waste Connections, well, actually it's now the J. Scott Campbell Foundation Bike Build. That'll be December 8th at the SE Inc. facility on Southeast 38th. And I can send that info. But it's a Waste Connection started doing bike build for kids many years ago out of our corporate office down in California, and then it just spread out to all the sites. So every site does their own. Clark County has traditionally been one of our biggest ones as a company, and Scott Campbell was the man who organized it here locally. When he passed away last year, we rolled that into his foundation, so he has a foundation that sponsors that now, so all of our funding goes into that, and then the foundation takes care of it. And so this year we're planning on building 700 bikes for donations to local youth. So every kid, the premise of it is every kid should get a new gift and every kid should get a new bike in the community. So we'll do 700 bikes this year. We did 500 last year, so it's a pretty big jump for us. But in about four to 5 hours time, we can put them all together, break the whole site down, and deliver them usually the next Monday or Tuesday. So, fun program.
Certainly worthwhile.
I have to say, I went and did that last year, and it's quite a sight and quite a just seeing the whole assembly line and how everyone's working together. And you say 4 to 5 hours, but I swear we're out of there in two.
Yeah, it's
incredible. So if you have an opportunity to go participate or check it out, I highly encourage it.
Everybody was gone before the pizza got there last year. And if you want to see somebody who is an expert in production manufacturing or production management, the mayor of Vancouver is fantastic in directing people around and getting everybody where they need to be. So it's very impressive.
Good. Thanks, Eric.
Okay.
So, Alan, I would like to propose a quick adaptation to our agenda, given our time right now, and then I would like to make sure that we get to the advising portion of the advisory council tonight.
Go for it.
I was going to see if in the next 5 minutes we could probably give you the subcommittee recycling contract and regional system study updates. We could probably do that in the next 5 minutes and then spend the remainder of the time on the rate proposal conversation, if you so approve.
Yes.
I'll let Tim go since Mike just found out he has to talk about the regional system. So,
yeah. Mike's been very patient back there.
So just some quick updates. So the subcommittee, we had started to put together, or you all had started to put together, a policy subcommittee that was led by Jennifer. And then, as you know from the last meeting, she had to step down from the SWAC. And so we're really looking for a new champion of that policy subcommittee. I know Chris had expressed some interest. Right now, he has stated he doesn't have the time to lead it, but he wants to be a part of it. If there's anyone else that is interested in that, you can talk with me, and it would be great to set up a meeting, you know, between meetings, and then report out at the next meeting about upcoming legislation or actions that the group would want to do to advocate for policy changes related to solid waste issues. And that would be working closely with our council and our policy advisor in partnership to see those things happen.
And I know the time commitment is more, so I can say off the top of my head that it would probably be, I know there's a monthly hour-long phone call and probably an additional hour of just communication time per month, and then reporting back out to SWAC and gathering information at the next SWAC meeting, so at every SWAC meeting it'd be a standing agenda item. So it wouldn't be a huge time commitment, and we can help do a lot of that support work as well. So that would be the time commitment for that one if anybody's interested.
So think about it. You raise your hand now or just email me later. But it would be great to continue that on with Jennifer leaving.
Do you have a framework of that available somewhere?
That would need to be created.
That was one of the first things that we were working on with Jennifer, and then Jennifer couldn't complete that due to her time. So the framework, we have a structure for what it does look like.
Yeah.
Really, it's identifying policy, getting SWAC, and then we know what the steps are to get that in place, but I think establishing some type of priorities and values for the SWAC to frame what they make their priorities around would be a first step. And we started, but we didn't get it done.
Yeah.
So
I would be more than happy to sit down with the subcommittee that's formed to figure out what that looks like. And we're here as resources for you all. And then just other project involvement. As you know, we've been telling you there's RFPs coming up, and we'll continue to reach out when there's opportunities to be more involved with our projects and programs. And then moving on from the residential recycling contract update. So again, this will be a regular item on the agenda that I'd like to continue every quarter. And I just wanted to update you. I put this in your packet. Just a quick summary of kind of how things are moving along. Under the original contract, we've utilized all of the existing extension language in that contract, and it was set to expire in 2019. We've talked with our PA's office, and utilizing some language in the contract that's highlighted on your paper, we can continue to extend the contract. And we were advised to do it on a year-to-year basis. And a number of the reasons why we'd like to do this is because the markets are fluctuating, and we're not really at the end of that and seeing what's going to be the result of it. We're starting to see, you know, more domestic markets and everything, but we want to kind of wait it out before we start jumping into a 7 to 10 year contract right in the middle of markets in flux. And then the second reason is just there's new technologies that we'd like to invest some more research into and piloting of other collection styles and systems. So we've talked already about every other week collection. There might be an additional cart, separate paper containers. And so I've kind of outlined all that. And to save time, if you could just read over this on your own time. And if you have any feedback, please do send it to me. And we will continue to reach out. And once, by the end of this year, the goal is I want to draft a plan of what this research and exploration of options is going to look like. And I would like the SWAC to be involved in that when we go through and implement these pilots to determine what that new contract is going to look like or what we're going to be asking in that new contract. So, yeah. That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
The regional assistance study went out the 24th of October, and we'll be out until the end of December, and then we'll start an initial weed out period where we'll go through the the proposals internally, and then get that down to about the top three to top five for a selection committee review. And the timing of all that's still with holidays and everything's a little bit flux, but we have discussed the potential to have someone from the SWAC on the selection committee. And I think, you know, with us running really short of time tonight, what we'd like to do is when we get a little closer to that is do email asking if anybody's interested in it and what that time commitment is going to be, and kind of go from there. I think Rich is probably going to be representing the city as one of the selection committee members, and obviously can't do both. And so if anyone's interested, just let me know. And I want to figure out what that time commitment is and how many we're going to have before I really reach out to you. That way you have an idea of what you're getting into.
So I'd like to follow up with a list of all of the projects that are pending and all of the projects that are upcoming, a list with estimated time commitments for everybody, an estimated structure of what it might look like to participate, and then we can, that way, you know, rather than have everybody remember that there was a thing that you might have been interested in that you talked about a month ago, we'll send something out and with some more details, and then that way you can kind of track and see what's coming up that might suit your interest or your expertise or something, or your passions or something like that. So just, we'll get that out to everybody with a list of all of the projects that are upcoming and pending where we can have Slack involvement and participation, so. Okay, so those are those updates. Now we're going to get into
proposal.
Correct. So I have Mike and Derek at the table. In case I missed something, please fill in some gaps. But the gist is, I think we shared a little bit last time, is that in July, Waste Connection issued a letter. They made a request to increase recycling costs in the county in order to match the true cost of processing and marketing and the revenue from those materials. So as Derek mentioned, I think we've talked a lot about China's national sword and the shift in markets, and really what that looks like is that what it means here for us is that the cost to process our recyclable materials at the sorting facility has gone up, and that looks like more people slowing down lines and less material able to go through the line, less capacity to handle the same amount of material. So the adaptations that have been made have left to a increase in costs to process the material that they're collecting at the curb in the commingled carts. On the other end of that, because the markets that were available and a little bit more generous overseas have made themselves less available or completely unavailable. I don't know the right way to put it, but we can't send things to where we were sending them before. So both shipping costs have increased, and then the purchasing price that people are paying for those materials has gone down. So the cost to ship the materials, oddly enough, it's cheaper to send them to domestic markets than it was to ship them to China, which is a whole other conversation. But it's gotten more expensive to do everything, and then at the end, less money is being made off of those materials. So to take a look at the true cost of that material, of that process, Waste Connections asked to bring the entirety of recycling to a break-even point. And I guess I don't know how to simplify this, but basically to make the money that they're bringing in equal the money that they're paying to process materials. They have been experiencing significant loss over, especially over the last year. And then prior to that, there was some inequities in the amount of material or in the cost of processing and marketing materials. So they proposed an increase in the monthly bills curbside to bring them flush. The entire cost, including what they were losing before, and including the material, the increased impacts of the system, or the increased impacts of the national sort. So forgive me if I'm glossing over anything. I'd hope to have a table in front of you all that would help navigate this, but the numbers aren't working out, so I don't have it in front of you anymore. So really, what we're doing right now is going through a process to analyze their request, assess, get stakeholder feedback. So what we've done so far is we had a conversation with the City of Vancouver, which is the largest city in our county. We also took it to our recycling solid waste system steering committee, regional solid waste system steering committee, and laid out a series of options about A, how do we address the request, and then what mechanisms are in place for us to gather whatever money we decide we're going to get. So what I wanted to go through are three potential responses that kind of run a spectrum from giving everything they ask of meeting the request to saying no to the request completely, and then something in the middle. And what I'm hoping to get from the SWAC today is kind of which of the strategies or which of the philosophies are, you know, from your standpoint as representatives of the groups that you are coming from residents, from businesses, is what is your take or what is your feedback or advice on which mechanism and which philosophy? And I'm going to go over them all in just a second. So one is, you know, where does your preference lie? Additionally, is what additional questions do you have? So we're going to go through these options And if this was something that the county and Waste Connections was to push out to the public, what additional questions would you hope that we consider as a county in going through this process and evaluating the request and coming to a conclusion? And lastly, and this may be something that we discuss at the next one, but I want to start thinking about it now, is what when we do roll something out to the public to address what's going on with the recycling markets and the National Sword having been in the news a lot lately, and Portland raising costs and a lot of programs changing their programs having been a popular news topic, is if we were to roll this out to the county residents and the cities, is what story would you think residents, or what stories or what points of the story should we be telling to really share the story behind why we're doing this and why this has to be done? So those are the three things that I'm looking to get out of this group today. And like I said, that last one will probably be an ongoing conversation. Whatever we end up doing, we're going to need to communicate thoroughly with the public. And we want to make sure we tell the right story and that it's a story that people will pay attention to and may have some positive change. So again, the request was to bring recycling processing costs and the money that they make off of that to a break-even point. So the first option would be to consider the entire cost of processing the recyclables and the revenue from the sale of the recyclables. This would bring the processor, after distributing the revenue to the city of Vancouver, to a break-even point. Does that kind of sum up what we've talked about? The second option is Clark County will consider only impacts to the revenue since the implementation of China's National Sword, including increases in processing costs and the reduction in market values. So really that would be saying the original request is to cover the entire cost of recycling. The second one is to only address the changes over the last, year and a half since, when did we start? When you guys started feeling the impacts of the National Sword in October, you said? So over the last year, they've seen a significant dip, and that's where the losses became much more significant. And the last one is to not address any recycling processing cost until completing the financial assessment in the regional system study, which would not be finished until September of 2019. So as I mentioned earlier, I was hoping to have some actual numbers in front of you guys today to kind of share what that would look like as a direct impact to curbside customers. Obviously, the request for, let's see, the total request curbside for recycling would have been
272, wasn't that initially?
I think we were 272, I would 75 cents a month.
Yeah, so if we met, if we responded to the request and increased curbside recycling monthly charges to meet the actual cost of processing and collecting recyclables, that would be about $2.75 per household per month. Obviously, the other end of the spectrum is a $0 impact to residents right now, because we would be not responding. We would be saying, no, we're not going to address this problem at all until we get more information or the story changes, or until we get to a critical point where the stuff that we're recycling can't be marketed anymore. And then the fun part is the middle option, where we only address the changes over the last year as a direct result of the National Sword and the subsequent market changes, would be somewhere between, I don't know, what's a fair spectrum to talk about from... It would be between that zero and $2.75. So,
something in the middle.
It's something in the middle. And we are, I don't know, I wanted Mike to come up here to talk a little bit more about the math that we are doing, working with Waste Connections, working with the City of Vancouver, and really what we're taking into consideration when we're looking at all of this.
So what we're doing is we're taking it, we're looking at the contract first. Okay, the contract really doesn't offer a lot of options. It really is set up to spread issues like this across the TIP, so that's one way of doing it. And so we're kind of measuring the impact across the TIP based on, a tonnage projection through 18.
And just real quick, just to clarify, that when there's two terms we're going to use here. One is TIP fee. That is the that's really putting it on the cost of garbage. So when we talk about TIP fee, that is a garbage. We'd be putting the cost of this request onto the garbage customers. and that would, tip fee is the fee that comes from literally tipping the garbage into the landfill. So that is a per ton of garbage charge that we would be talking about. So
yeah, and the other one is that this material has changed so much in the last 10 years since we implemented this program that it really no longer qualifies as a truly source-separated commingled material. And when we had the three bins, it was source-separated. And it was a lot cleaner than this. We had anticipated contamination 10% or less, and we're seeing levels of 40%. So really, this has become almost a special waste that requires handling to produce a product, and then the rest is residual. And so we're kind of heading down the road of calling it a special waste and implementing a processing fee to handle that. So there's the tip fee, as he mentioned, and a direct processing fee for recyclables. And in the case of the processing fee, that is how it would be rolled out then to the curbside customers. So it would be basically a straight pass. And you know they, on average, set out X amount of pounds per month per year, and that's how we would eventually calculate how this cost would be spread out among each household. And so that's one of the things that we really want to know what your preference is. Is that to spread it across the garbage system, or to spread it to the curbside customers? And that's actually what they had proposed initially.
Yeah, so I guess to summarize this, option A, Waste Connections, or CRC. No, it's Waste Connections. So I forget which one's which.
Well, actually, it impacts both.
Yeah. So Waste Connections was losing money on recyclables, processing recyclables, prior to the National Sort. The National Sort made it worse, so their losses went up. Option A is to address the entirety of that, what was being lost before, and setting a new standard for what recycling, processing, and marketing costs are now. Second option is to just take a look at the change in processing costs and marketing costs since the National Sword campaign came into place. So that's been a very significant change and has created a lot of revenue loss on top of what was already going on. Obviously, that would be a smaller per customer or per household fee than option A. And then the least impactful option to the public is not addressing or not increasing the cost at all, continuing to allow for those losses, but also run the risk of materials not becoming marketable or becoming no longer marketable and potentially impacting our program. One of the things in all three of these options is that there is no intention of changing the program materials. So what is recyclable now, or what we capture, sorry, I'm going to say that again, what we allow in the curbside now would continue. We would not be removing things now. So this would also, either any of the option A or B would allow us to maintain the program as it is and continue with that value of recycling. The values of recycling not necessarily being that it's cheaper than garbage, but that it is a waste reduction, it is an environmental benefit, it is a natural resource reduction or conservation method, that the program would be staying the same, which is something that through all of our process, through all of these big changes, a critical thing is to be clear with the public, to not make any drastic changes to our program, not to remove materials. So we want to maintain public trust by keeping a consistent program and not removing materials, but to also create a system that reflects the values of the county, which are not that recycling is necessarily cheaper, but that it does have broader environmental impacts.
If I'm understanding the current program correctly.
Yeah. Please say back what I just said to you so I can make sense.
No, but the way I received, the way I understood it, when this was rolled out, the current program with the big bins and stuff like that, we were expecting a 10% contamination rate, right? And we're actually at a 40% contamination rate. What, is there anything that can be done to reduce that number? And if we do reduce that number, does that decrease the overall cost for our Waste Connections and processing it?
We have limited immediate opportunities to... Contamination is something, part of it, a lot of it is, it's human behavior. It's behavior. Like, people have gotten so good at recycling, however, sometimes I mean, it's a behavior change. So it's not, we don't have a quick fix for the contamination issue. We do want to put in some things in place that are, you know, Kim and our staff have worked on some cart tagging programs before, which is sort of an enforcement, a perceived enforcement, and a communication strategy as close to the behavior as possible. So that carries some shock value. It carries like a different than a bus advertisement or a mail flyer. It's something. So there are some strategies that we're working on, trying to figure out how to implement them the best, but it's not going to be a quick turnaround at all. So there would be very little immediate opportunities to reduce contamination. As far as how immediately a reduction in contamination, the materials that they're sorting out are still getting less. They're still selling for less, but it would reduce the processing cost. But I'll let Derek talk a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, so when we've studied the material in the past, and Kim's been heavily involved in this, we found that there's about 20% of the material that goes out as residual. Half of it is non-system material, or garbage or glass, whatever else, and then half of it is system that, or material that our system can't pick up for one reason or another. It's too small, it's next to the wrong thing when it runs through, there's a million different things that happen. So, you know, if we say 10% contamination, that's still there. That other 10% that just isn't reclaimed is still there. And right now we're landing about 30 to 34% overall. So that extra 10 to 14 is now the impact of that first 10%, what it does to the rest of that stuff. And the fact that in the past we could just move it to a different pile and sell it to whomever and they'd still buy it and they aren't buying it anymore. So assuming markets continue as they are, if we clean it up a little bit better, you know, we produce a really clean paper product now. And the cost of production on that are extraordinarily high to save that chunk of paper, 40% of the paper. I don't foresee the cost of production changing anytime soon. The only thing that would change it on the production cost side would be if the mills, you know, the end markets, figure out a way to handle more contaminated product, unfortunately. So they almost figure out how to help us deal with ourselves. And so they can glean that material out a little easier, and then you might have moving that material. But it's still, you're still sending them garbage or something contaminated, and they're just figuring out how to do it. Because we can't really speed it up a whole lot further without doing that.
Yeah. I think another important thing to to clarify as well is that the system, so you'll get to see the Merc, you haven't seen the Merc yet, but it just looks like a big game of mousetrap where things go through and then they come out in different piles. I mean, that's overly simplified, but that's kind of what things go in and then they magically get separated out. So that system is based upon materials that aren't as abundant anymore, so they were built to be really good at sorting out X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z aren't around anymore. So our new shifting packaging materials, there's recyclable and then there's capturable, and those are kind of two different terms. That if it might be recyclable if it gets to the right place at the right time. Like plastic bags are recyclable. The city of Vancouver has a very good wrap program, and you can drop a lot of things off at the grocery store. Those are recyclable when kept separate and shipped to the right location. However, once they go in the recycle bin, they're no longer recyclable, and they often contaminate other things in there as well. So there's capturable, there's recyclable, and our system is a little bit geared towards.
Well, that's like clamshells. You know, other people, and, you know, how come we don't do that? You know, well, if we can't make money on it, why, you know, I try to keep it out of the landfill, but that stuff too. I've talked with many people, and they don't want this to go to the landfill. So the option is we have to do something that works. And, and I think they're expecting to pay more. So I think it's a problem of, you know, that we have to deal with how much more.
So I guess that's a question if that's the group. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Steve.
On a percentage basis, what percentage does this rate increase represent over the existing rates?
We're still working on that, Steve. I mean, I've got a model that I think finally it will work for us. And Rich and I are starting to. We're working off of estimates off of the first quarter, but now we're, you know, into the third quarter, and we know the fourth quarter of last year was really bad too. So now that we've got some solid data, I'm going to move it from an estimate into some actuals,
and to get us a little better estimate. And then Rich has gone back through the system quite a few years, and it's got some basic averages over the long term. And so we're going to sit down and with these guys and internally first, and then with these guys to really hash this out and see what it looks like, and then come back. And I really hate to give any numbers, and then because even on our side, they've just been changing as we get more information about how money flows and how it all works.
Because the rates went up recently.
Yeah, they always go up for CPI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the tip fee went up $1.43.
But this is different than that.
It is. This is outside of CPI.
And did I hear like $2.75 per month? Is that?
That would be at the curb. That would
be at the curb.
So if you did a processing fee at the transfer station, so they would drive through and pay X amount of dollars on every truck of recycled to come in. Right now, they don't pay anything. Yeah. They come in and they get weighed, but they don't pay anything. Unless they're under our system, they don't pay anything. Under some of the city contracts, they have a processing fee in place already. That was part of their contracts. So we're trying to sort all this out, as a sort of the regional planning authority to help the cities out, figure that out, build our processing cost model from the CRC contract in there, and then try to determine, well, what would a fair processing fee be to make them as whole as possible?
I mean, at the end of the day, this gets passed along to the ratepayers.
At the end of the day, it's which ratepayer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I'm trying to say. It's either the choice is either we put it on the garbage or we send it to the people who have the service.
Yeah. But the people like me and people in the community,
absolutely,
they're going to see the rates increase by some number.
Correct. Some number.
And so, so what you're going to have is a campaign to manage those expectations and describe why the rates are increasing, and then you're going to have to manage the response to that as well.
Correct.
And without knowing what that percent is going to be, you're going to deal with whatever the reactions are. Is that a fair characterization?
That's correct. And that's on the education side after we figure out what this looks like.
All right.
And then we think there might also... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there might also be... And this might be wishful thinking, but there might also be the potential to leverage this increase into an attention-grabbing conversation about contamination, because while rates are going up, they're not permanent. If we can get back to a better system where things go...
Yeah, but and not everybody's going to read those materials.
It's true. Yeah, no, I think it's behavior change. We have a limited number of meaningful interactions with any of our residents.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand...
Yeah, and
the issue.
One of the reasons that I find the sending it back to the recycling customer more attractive is that shock, not the shock value, but the, hey, you're putting this stuff in, you're driving the cost up.
Yes, I understand.
Well, plus with the Chinese event, they're expecting something. Yeah, I think.
I think the people that have been paying attention.
Yeah, they're expecting something, and they don't want it in the landfill. And you're almost buying $4 a gallon gasoline to drive those trucks around, and that's up more than it was last year forever. And so they know that those trucks are using fuel, so they're going to expect this to go up. But it's just up to you to figure out how much it's got to go up.
Well, it's
right. But you got
numbers
that are here.
You got a bunch of numbers.
Yeah,
you've got a variety of issues you're going to have to manage. You're going to have a very thoughtful communication plan when these rates go up, and you're going to have to describe why they're going up. To the extent we choose the first alternative, you're going to really need to think carefully about that, because I think there's some people that will react strongly to it. That's just... I'm happy to pay. I understand how the system works. I understand why the rates need to go up. I get that. But not everybody's going to have that set up. They're not going
to
have that.
So to that end, I guess, maybe I put this out to the group, is what information or what questions? So let's say somebody does take this and they don't like it.
Not going to like it.
We're going to have to take this to a whole brand new council.
Yeah.
And then that there's going to be people on that brand new council that are not going to like this.
That's
so
exactly right.
What, from your perspective, are the, what story can we tell that makes this understandable, and what vetting can we do to make sure that we have the residents' trust in, from your perspective, and we're taking a look at this question with all of our stakeholders, is what are the questions we need to be asking of our partners, of Waste Connections, of ourselves? Because I don't think we can just say, hey, look around, everybody else is doing this. Well,
and the people that are going to be writing the checks to pay for it. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to need a very thoughtful communication plan to describe what's going on. You're going to have to talk about contamination.
Well, they are. This was in this week's paper. Here we go.
But not everybody reads that stuff. I think the communications are great, and not everybody reads that stuff.
I'll tell a story on that. We did hangers on the cars.
Right.
And there would be hangers a year later. Years.
Not everybody's going to care.
So, I think the key thing that I would like to get today, I and Travis and I talk about this, is your preference to send it back to the recycling customer or spread it across the garbage. I think inherently it's...
What prevents you from doing both?
It's already being done to an extent. That the system is sort of set up to handle it that way, but we have not raised the tip fee,
right,
to incorporate any additional revenue at this point.
And there is nothing from keeping us from doing both. I think just that for simplification, we're looking at both ends of the spectrum and trying to put something right in the middle. So there is no reason we couldn't.
My advice would be find a way to do both. So
is there a curbside fee right now?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Pardon?
Oh yeah.
So what is it now?
For the city of Vancouver, for 2019, it's going to be $3.05, I think.
So, Kim, do you remember what it is here now?
What's the question? It's $3.
But it falls
into
your garbage, so it's around $20.
It's $5.34 for the county.
And it's going up, it could go up $2.75.
Which is a 51% increase.
What's the time frame for making this decision?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Derek,
yeah,
what's your time?
Derek wants
sorry,
it.
Derek wants
it.
I'm sorry.
I will say that we are committed to keeping the recycling program going, but we are a business and we have
gotta make a profit.
People pressuring us to get certain returns back, and we have
absolutely
lost $4 million in Clark County on residential recycling in the last 12 months.
How does that compare with the rest of your corporation?
It depends on the market. So this is a unique market because everything is, one bundled service. But I don't know what the overall number is. Recycling for us in general, because we're a national company, and the West Coast is certainly more heavy in recycling than others. It's not a huge number to our overall bottom line, but here locally, it's an important thing for us and an important piece of it. But and it's particularly in the state of Washington, you look at a lot of, and like Travis said, we don't need to do it just because everybody else is doing it, but Snohomish County just passed a $5 a month increase on recycling. King County, I think I had it right here, King County was $2.49 a month. Mm-hmm. Grays Harbor, $2.52. So it is, we're being consistent with everything else. We feel like we've been patient, we worked through the system, we wanted to see how it all played out. It's been a year. It's time to do something with it. So
I guess I would pose the question, since we are at 7:59, is what information would be helpful that we could get to you that would help you kind of maybe in the interim between our next meeting and now kind of provide some more feedback? Obviously, we need to come to some kind of a conclusion before our next meeting, and I would love to talk this out more, but understand people have to go. So what would be something we could get out to everybody that,
Well, for me, I'd like to see a rate recommendation that I'd understand the percentage increase, and I also want to make sure that you've thought through a communications plan of how you're going to convey that to customers. And then we're going to consider all three of those alternatives. I mean, at its core, I don't oppose this as an idea. I understand you guys are business to make a profit, and I understand that you can pass that cost along to the ratepayers at the end of the day. I get that. But I think your communications plan is going to have to be rock solid to convey that, and you're going to have to manage the responses you get. Those are the things I would want to see. I would want to see a rate recommendation, what the percentage increase is, And I mean, to me, I don't have a problem writing a check every month and paying for it. It's not that I understand what goes on, but not everybody's going to have that same point of view.
Well, I'd like to see the, you know, the year that you've lost because of the China thing should be, you know, you can't recoup it, but it shouldn't continue.
Yeah, no, just to be clear, they're not looking to recoup past losses. Right. This is just the day that the rate goes into effect moving forward.
But I think, you know, that's reasonable. And then any further to go above that to the 275, you have to come up with really good.
You gotta
talk about the $4 gas and the expense of doing this.
You're going to have a really thoughtful story to sell that. Because there are going to be people, some people are going to say fine, other people are going to react really strongly to it. And that's just, I think that's what I think you're going
to do. Well, and like you said, you got a whole new council to talk to.
Yep.
I'd like to know if there's some market research from other, you mentioned Snohomish and King County, have already done this. Maybe, you know, what did they do for their communication strategy?
Yeah, and I will say we have, like, those are definitely things, I'm glad you brought that up, because we have, you know, attended all of the Metro meetings where they've been planning this, and they've, I wouldn't use the word rock solid for those, but I think the other part is that the media's been doing a lot of that groundwork for us, so I think putting that together, we could definitely pull out some examples of what, because it's not just about telling the story in a way that it makes sense, but it's also about telling the way in the story that maybe has some behavioral impact. If people are going to get upset about it, it might be an opportunity for us to improve these behaviors. Yep. So.
And there will be people whose behaviors you're not going to be able to change. And you see that in the car. Mm-hmm.
Or we go back to the three-bin system, Jason, was the other option. We regress the system.
Oh,
so.
God, no.
Another card.
It's
an option.
So I can put some, once we get some more, once our math gets more confident, we can share that, a proposal to you. If we feel like we need to have, not an emergency SWAC meeting, but I don't know what the name is, but
Special meeting.
There you go.
And also just the date is that on November 28th, we're having a work session with the county council about this. So that's, we're hoping to get all of this done as far as timeline goes. By November 28th, we need to have a rate recommendation and the justification and all of this stuff for council before the 28th.
The new people in there.
We'll have whoever is in there.
Yeah.
Well, and you'll need a communications plan. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for coming, and this is the holiday season coming upon us, so everybody enjoy that. And I'm going to Arizona next week, so Steve's in charge. So have a good holiday season. Thank you for coming.
Thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you.